1956, the year of the supramental descent, the mother gave a very significant message. She says, "The greatest victories are the least noisy. The advent of a new world is not announced by the beating of drums. The work of the avatar," which we are reading in Savitri, "is a very quiet and silent work. Human consciousness moves in a very narrow range, very narrow arc of possibilities, which I am tempted to skip pages, and last time I was doing it, I realized, let me stick to the canto where we are, which will be there in Savitri subsequently. What is human consciousness? So narrow zone, it moves in that. Whereas the work of the avatar is at levels which we cannot understand, which we cannot comprehend. Every word is corrupted. Love, oh, we understand by love. Bliss, we understand by bliss. Knowledge, we understand by knowledge. Actually, we understand nothing. We understand the shadows of these truths in the human consciousness. Knowledge, for instance, has nothing to do with intellectual knowledge in the parlance of yoga. One may have read all the books of yoga and know nothing about yoga. One may have even written books on yoga and know nothing about yoga. Knowledge in the yogic parlance is oneness. Not intellectual understanding of oneness, which is tolerance, sympathy, adjustment, etc., etc., but the living experience of oneness, which can only come when we are able to either see, feel, or in some way experience and touch the one divine in all things. In all things, beings, forces, events, circumstances, everything. Then that we can say that we have taken one step towards knowledge. Similarly, love at a human level, it's a horizontal expansion of the ego. But in the divine sense, love has a very different connotation. It's the descent of the highest consciousness in response to a cry from the abyss. And the world does not know this because it neither knows those heights from which it comes, and it neither knows the abysses towards which it goes. What is this human figure? A puppet in time. There is a beautiful, not so beautiful, beautiful in terms of its description, but when we look at ourselves, it's not very flattering. On page 18, there is a description of man in this very canto. We will solve all the cosmic problems, how little we know ourselves. A chattel and a plaything of time's lords, page 18. What is man? A chattel and a plaything of time's lords. Or one more pawn who comes, destined to be pushed. One slow move forward on a measureless board, in the chess play of the earth soul with doom. Such is the human figure drawn by time. And this human figure, what is this kind play? Of course, there is a line which links the previous passage. A conscious frame was here, a self-born force, describing Savitri, that she is not that. She is a conscious frame, not just a conscious soul. The very frame is conscious. The embodied consciousness is conscious. A self-born force. In this enigma of the dusk of God, this slow and strange, uneasy compromise of limiting nature with a limitless soul. This is the problem All human problems have its roots within us, not outside us. We have a limited nature, but a limitless soul. So limitless soul seeks for limitless things, limitless love, limitless ananda, limitless knowledge. But nature is very limited. So we think that maybe it's not within us, I can find it outside me. So in somebody else I seek limitless love. Through some object I seek limitless joy. Through push button technology I seek limitless knowledge. But nature everywhere is limited. It's not a question of one person or another person. It is a limited nature. And the limitless soul, which has no limits to its expansion, to its dream, it is the eternal dreamer, is trapped as if in a limitless, in a limited nature. In fact, the more the evolution proceeds inside, it creates a greater and greater sense of restriction, like the cocoon. Because there is a layer of humanity which is very satisfied with itself. The mother speaks of three layers of humanity. She says one layer is very satisfied with itself. And then she says, never convert these people. They'll get disoriented. Don't talk to them that, you know, love is a force which comes from above, from the Supreme. It will totally upset the balance. One will understand when the time is ready. Suddenly one will be lost. What is this love? So there is a whole layer of humanity which is not yet aware of this deep, limitless possibility. It knows limited nature and believes this is the best and the highest and is happy within those limits. It does not even seek to break those limits and is very happy and contented. This happiness and contentment is not a divine content. In fact, Sri Aurobindo uses the word divine discontent in humanity. This is not a very happy state, but people are happy. Like, you know, when you see a swine rolling in the mud, you say, oh, it's a pig, but the pig is very happy. Try to give it a nice wash and keep it away. Of course, pigs have got used to nice washes, but still, you know, it loves that atmosphere. So there is a whole level, but as the evolution proceeds, as we become aware of something in us which is limitless, we begin to seek limitless possibilities and we are confronted with a limited nature. This is an issue of limiting nature with a limitless soul. Excuse me, see the perfection of the words and a small we miss out. It's not limited nature, it's a limiting nature. Nature also is limitless, but right now it only this much is manifested and this is limiting us. Where all must move between an ordered chance and an uncaring blind necessity, to high the fire spiritual dare not blaze. Why it has been arranged like that, this one line explains it much later. When Savitri asks for the boon, then the Supreme will tell her the same thing but in great length. That why it is arranged like that, that each step we take is a battle and a struggle. This brings out the highest and the deepest possibilities. It extracts, in fact, there is a very beautiful word Sri Aurobindo has used in the hour of God. What is this hour like? A treading of the winepress of the wraths of God. It's like nature is not letting you go. So you are putting your best effort. So when you cross the bar, you deserve it. Imagine yesterday or day before that gold medalist in Olympic 100 meter race. And it's amazing, you know. Imagine if he had no competitors. He would not have been able to put his best. But because there are people who are equally, you know, struggling with him. And then when he puts his best, it becomes a spectacular show. So there is this limited nature, limiting nature with a limitless soul. And this is arranged like that. Because if it was not there, the spiritual fire would suddenly, the soul would just escape and go into its ultimate origin and leave nature just as it is, unchanged. But now it has to struggle. So in the process, it pulls nature. Even to make a little drill into the human consciousness, which is like a hard crust all around, how much effort of concentration and purification is required? Forget the transformation part. Just to do a simple Raj Yoga, to learn to concentrate the mind on one spot, how much of alignment of nature is required? How much distraction we have to keep aside? In all this process, nature gets prepared. Something it receives as an imprint. So this is the reason why it has been arranged like that. If once it met the intense original flame, an answering touch might shatter all measures made, and earth sink down with the weight of the infinite. That's why this game is made so difficult. We cry and cry, so much so that the tears run dry. But so difficult to have a vision of the divine. Why is it so? It's not enough to cry. We have to learn to stand in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, face the great and grim battle of life. Then probably we deserve a little bit of that grand vision. Shobindu speaks of it in the essays on the Gita. That this integral reality cannot be revealed unless you are strong to see that side of reality which we most shun and abhor. The divine, the terrible. Divine, the Kali. Divine, the destroyer. Divine, the mother, who destroys with love. We are prepared to see it only when we have been chastened by suffering and strengthened and purified by this grim scepter. And even then, the great warrior Arjuna is shaken to bits when he has that vision. He says, please dilute yourself, diminish yourself, I cannot behold it. He's a great warrior, prepared specifically for this great battle. He is one of the close confidants of the divine incarnate. He has played with the divine incarnate. We think often, you know, when the divine comes, people naturally, he brings his playmates. But still between his closest confidants and the divine, there is such a gulf. Someone like Arjuna, whom he says that, I have been with you for many, many lives. We have done the same thing together. You have forgotten, I remember. In spite of that, in spite of being the adhikari to receive the Gita and Sri Krishna's special boon that, okay, you want to have the grand vision, I'll grant you. Otherwise, you can't see it with these mortal eyes. And yet when he sees, he's shaken, he trembles with fear. It's strange. The vision of the divine can give fear. The entire ego self feels it's being dissolved. He literally sees himself also, along with the entire Kuru clan and the Pandavas, being sucked into the divine. So he says, my God, this is going to destroy me. I thought myself as a great and warrior and a benevolent. I have no existence in front of that. So, if suddenly the divine were to be revealed before us, this beautiful story of the mother when somebody asked to see her, or rather aspired, and to this girl of 15 or 16, suddenly she had a slight glimpse and she fainted. It's so difficult to behold that vision. So to deserve all this, we have to go through all this struggle and pain. In one of his poems, Krishna, Sri Aurobindo writes that for this one moment lived the ages past, all the hunger, the struggle and the pain to deserve that. So here it is, an answering touch might shatter all measures made and earth sink down with the weight of the infinite. So we should not grudge the time because the realization will be far more perfect. We should just have trust that it will be. And then he describes this world, a jail is this immense material world, even this immense material world. We think only prisoners are in jail. There was a very interesting, almost a paradoxical caption yesterday, if some of us saw, on page 2 of the Indian Express. There was a picture of Matri Mandir and people meditating around it. On top of it, it was written prayer, comma, freedom. So, but what was written on the side was very interesting. Shows the human consciousness. Left side, big picture of Matri Mandir. On top of it, prayer, comma, freedom. Right side, bullet, one. People meditating at the ashram for Sri Aurobindo's birthday. Okay, good enough, doesn't matter. That mistake is possible. Bullet 2. Freedom for prisoners from so and so jail given by the chief minister. When I saw that caption, I was actually thinking, my God, these people have really advanced so much. They are really thinking that this is the symbol of freedom for mankind. But the only freedom we can conceive of is freedom from the limited jail. But this whole material world is a jail. Why? Because it imprisons our consciousness and we cannot see what we are. We cannot see that which is the real and the unique. It blinds us and we live as if blinded. Only the difference is we are blinded with two eyes. And it's hard to say in this world who is better. The one who is blind with two eyes and the one who is blind without eyes. A jail is this immense material world. Across each road stands armed a stone-eyed law. At every gate, the huge dim sentinels pace. A great tribunal of the ignorance. It's interesting that all the words which are related to administration, policing and courts, Sri Aurobindo has used in a very negative way. So he speaks of, across each road stands armed a stone-eyed law. At every gate the huge dim sentinel space, a great tribunal of the ignorance. Where is justice on earth? Justice cannot be till there is truth. One may go anywhere to the courtrooms. An inquisition of the priests of night. In judgment sit on the adventurer's soul. Whether you deserve it or not, who decides? The priest of the night. And the dual tables and the karmic norm restrain in us, restrain the titan in us and the god. Pain with its lash, joy with its silver bribe. How they restrain? They have a very old strategy. The titan and the gods. If you try to escape from this law, try to discover something great. First thing, you are offered a bribe. Oh, something else will come your way. Something which is very, very alluring and attractive. It says, don't go. What is there? Spiritual truth, soul, God. All this is mad people's job. Be sane, get a good job. Okay, you are not satisfied with your job, that's why you are turning to God. I'll get you something much better. That's why when Swami Vivekananda, somebody came to him asking for God and he said, I have renounced everything. So Swami Vivekananda asked him, what do you have that you have renounced? So he said, no sir, I have renounced myself. He said, you do one thing, you go, earn 1 lakh rupees and then you come and renounce it. That is renunciation. So it, joy with its bribe and pain with its lash. If you try to escape, if you try to do any of these things, you see how around you everything will come as if against this aspiration. Everything will begin to contradict. The same people who are very happy with you for no reason at all will turn against you. The same people who helped you, who talk very nice things, beautiful things, will suddenly come in the way. So this is, they will talk, as Sri Aurobindo says in one of his letters, that in India everybody reveres the Swami, but nobody likes his own son to become a Swami. Don't do that, that is not the normal life. So here, pain with its lash, joy with its silver bribe, guard the wheels circling immobility. A bond is put on the high climbing mind, a seal on the too large wide open heart. Death stays the journeying discoverer, life. Thus is the throne of the inconscient safe, while a tardy evolution, while the tardy coilings of the aeons pass. This is how the inconscient keeps the soul a prisoner. Ultimately, it has the last trump card. You have done so much work, tried, divine grace has poured so much of its light, and you have moved from point A to point P or X, and suddenly there is death, and you have to start a lot of it again. The mother says what is tragedy about human life is, of course there are so many tragedies we think of, but she says, when we are 60, then we learn how to live. By the time we are 60, then somebody, you know, over a period of time, getting all kinds of experiences, reading this, that, going, then we learn this is the way to live. By the time we learn how to live, life has slipped out of our hands. And we are already given a passport to the other worlds. This is how it guards the wheels. And we have to be born again. And she says, even a great being who is fairly conscious, even when he is born, it takes him some time to recover that lost thing. Eventually he'll recover. But it takes a while. It's not automatic. It's not that I have recovered this much. When I am born, I start from there. A little child will not start, you know, reciting Savitri from birth. He has to again go through some experiences. This is really a strange thing. So this is the human figure. And she has come to change all that. She's come to fight this great battle and change it. So on page 13, and she does it very silently. She's not advertising this. This is not a work of advertisement and propaganda. It's a very quiet and serious work. A combatant in silent, dreadful lists. Page 13, somewhere line number 88, 89, somewhere down below. A combatant in silent, dreadful lists, page 13. The world unknowing, for the world she stood. This is compassion. The world unknowing, for the world she stood. No helper had she, save the strength within. There was no witness of terrestrial eyes. The gods above and nature, soul below, were the spectators of that mighty strife. This is heroism. Sitting in one room to change this world. This is dream, if dreams there can be. This is courage. At 95, to start giving shape to a dream of world unity. Only the divine can dream and act and work like that. One small corner, and he dreams, and these dreams become realities of tomorrow. This is the silent work of the avatar. And for this fight, what has she come armed with? What is it that she has got? What is it that makes her fit for this fight? Why can't we be part of that? Somebody asked that I want to be a collaborator or participant in your mission. Like, you know, we have missions. So thought Shobindo's mission in our early letter. Shobindo says, it is very difficult to participate in my mission. I have no mission like that. Means I have a mission, but not mission, which is where people join like that. It means to be entirely selfless, to be completely free from the ego. Where is human nature ready for that? But we can join and share that prasad. This is the only thing given to man. So, she has come with something which is the rarest of rare power. What is that power she brings on earth? Here we have a beautiful description of Savitri. (Clears throat) on page 14, near to earth's wideness, intimate with heaven, exalted and swift, her young, large-visioned spirit, voyaging through worlds of splendor and of calm, overflew the ways of thought to unborn things. If you really want to be part of mother's work, we often use this word, I am doing mother's work. And 23 hours out of 24 hours, we are thinking about ourselves. To do her work means our thought should flow to unborn things. What is it that we are thinking of? Are we thinking of that future which is approaching us with such a speed, with such a beauty, with such a delight? Ardent was her self-poised, unstumbling will. Her mind a sea of white sincerity. Passionate in flow, had not one turbid wave. She's armed with that sincerity, with that flame. So to say that we are doing mother's work, we should change it to saying that we are letting the mother work in us. That itself is a good enough thing. If that can be done, it's a big work. To allow her to work in us, to have that aspiration, that sense of surrender, she will do her work. To say that we are doing mother's work is too big a stride for human consciousness. A few lines below. A wide self-giving was a native act. This is her nature. The divine comes armed with this. For us, probably if we have to write, we will say, a small self-keeping is our native act. We are small and we want to turn everything into that smallness and to keep and hoard and accumulate at all levels. Here, what is that which she has come with? A wide self-giving was a native act. So much people speak about mother, how her day used to be from morning till night. And when once Champaklalji remarked, seeing her feet becoming blue because she was standing and meeting people and so many kinds of activities she was engaged in. He said, mother, you should take some rest. She says, but my child, I have come for this. I have come for this work. We cannot imagine what love she brought into this universe. For years, probably decades, she didn't have a separate room to herself. We want big houses and I still unsatisfied. She doesn't have a separate room. The same room where she is there, work also goes on, and if she has to talk to somebody in private, there's an old fridge, the door can be open and she can talk to the person. And she lives with that and gives and gives and gives, letting everyone come near her. This is the divine incarnate. A wide self-giving was a native act. A magnanimity as of sea or sky. What is the magnanimity of the sea? It holds everything in itself. It gives shelter to the shark and the whale in its bosom, as well as it takes care of the little fishes which are its inhabitants. The dangerous and poisonous creatures, it envelops them, feeds them with its own blood, with its own life force, as well as those who will swallow these creatures and save. That is the magnanimity, a wideness of the sea or the sky, which observes everything and does not judge. Only the divine can do that. Holding all things within its bosom, the sea. Watching everything without judging, giving its equal consent to all, is the sky. A magnanimity as of sea or sky, enveloped with its greatness all that came. Towards the later part, when we read in the agenda, mother says, today I gave him a bath of the Lord. It's such a delightful, actually it's not written there, but one can almost remember one of her pictures with those broad smile which stretches from ear to ear, and she's saying, today I gave him a bath of the Lord. He came and nothing, no words were exchanged. She doesn't even ask whether you deserve it or not deserve it, whether you are worthy and unworthy. Whoever has come gets a bath of the Lord, enveloped with her greatness, all that came. Of course, human beings can always feel we are great, but it is her greatness. She gave without reserve. And gave a sense as of a greatened world. Her kindly care was a sweet, temperate sun. The same mother. And that's why her humanity, people could be so enamored by that, that sometimes one forgot that she is divine. She is the same one of whom much later, she is the embodied divine. Much later in Savitri, there is a description of the divine mother, not in her embodied form, but as she is the guardian of the worlds. And there it describes, the ages are the footfall of her tread. And when Ashwapati sees her and sees himself, he finds that he is just a little atom in a corner of her illimitable self. The same divine mother who holds the whole worlds has taken a human form. And then what she becomes? Her care is a kind and temperate sun. There are so many instances of little children going to her. The mother is wiping their tears. Like a human mother. When people would fall, they would not turn back to their parents, but rush to the mother. And she would not only clean it, give them chocolate, and pat them, and then they would go. They would go to her. There is a touching story of a girl who goes, and she has a little, spot of ink. And mother is taking all the pains to remove it herself, while a minister is waiting outside. And the cabinet minister gets restless and goes away. People are telling mother, why are you doing so much, spending so much time for this little child? That minister was waiting for you. Mother says, this child has given herself to me. And when the creation gives itself to the divine also gives itself completely to the creation. This is the beauty. Then nothing is small. Nothing is big, nothing is small. Even our smallest hurts and bruises, she takes care. Even our smallest needs, she takes care, if we give ourselves to the divine. So this is her nature. It's not that she is the divine mother, so she is, right high above. She doesn't understand our human miseries. Her kindly care was a sweet, temperate sun. Her high passion, a blue heaven's equipoise. At the same time, the same mother, who is spending all her time and energy to wash a little spot from a little girl, her frock, the same mother is building Auroville. This is her high passion, a blue heaven's equipoise. Sri Aurobindo describes it, what is the nature of divine Brahman? He scatters himself and builds these countless systems of worlds. All these stars are nothing but his work. At the same time, he fashions a little seashell and turns it into something beautiful. The hand that sent Jupiter spinning through heaven spends all its cunning to fashion a curl. So here, that is the nature she has brought. And few lines below, a deep of compassion, a hushed sanctuary, her inward help unbarred a gate in heaven. There were those who came doubting, resisting, turned away from her with an inner opening that would never be closed. There are even those who came thinking that they will tell mother, yes, yes, you are doing a good job, I have heard about you. The famous example of president of one of the countries who had heard, and then he came for a darshan and he was getting a little restless. He thought, anyways, this lady is doing a good work. Then he was thinking, what shall I tell her? So he thought, I'll tell her that you are doing a good job. He thought of that. because that's what, you know, one is accustomed to say as head of state, that I'll give a medal. So, and you know, all these thoughts are running into his head. And he goes, and then he describes, but when I was face to face with her, I was speechless and dumb. No thought arose. And I just knelt and bowed my head. There was nothing else he could do but that. And she smiled. And then when he comes back, he's a changed person for all his life, for the rest of his life to come. And what she did in those moments, she gave no mantra. There was no diksha outwardly. She did not say, I've initiated you, I've taken care of you. This was the beauty of mother. She let the person go with utter freedom. And yet, she had done something. And there are many, many persons here, I'm sure, who would recount many such experiences. Her inward help unbarred a gate in heaven. The very fact you went and stood in front of her was enough. Love in her was wider than the universe. The whole world could take refuge in her single heart. When someone asked the mother that my family also wants to come and stay in Pondicherry and this and that, mother said, my child, I wish I could accommodate everybody here. But my material means are limited. So I have to limit. But there was a time when she would say, I wish I could accommodate the whole world. That's the wideness she brought with her. But my material means are limited. This is, of course, post-supramental descent. So I have to draw a line. So she said that if you can stay on your own and support yourself, it's better. Because materially on earth, there are means which are required. The whole world could take refuge in her single heart. The great unsatisfied Godhead here could dwell. Who is this Godhead? Love. Who is never satisfied except by perfection. Knowledge can be satisfied. You can easily be tricked into the illusion that you know, but you don't know. Happiness can be satisfied. One can be satisfied with some happiness and things one has achieved. But love is something which is never satisfied. It always seeks perfection. The great unsatisfied Godhead here could dwell, vacant of the dwarf selves imprisoned here. Her mood could harbor his sublimer breath. What is it that love is seeking? A heart as vast or vaster than the universe. That is why in every heart love is seeking that, but doesn't find, because we are shut in the cabin of the little ego. Two lines below. At once she was the stillness and the word. A continent of self-diffusing peace, an ocean of untrembling virgin fire, the strength, the silence of the gods were hers. In her, he found a vastness like his own. How she had become, her being, her embodied being had become fit to embody love. Still, oceanic, vast, untrembling fire. In her, he found a vastness like his own. His high, warm, subtle ether he refound and moved in her as in his natural home. In her he met his own eternity. Love finds a perfect human heart to embody and enshrine. This is a beautiful place to stop. And maybe tomorrow we'll start Canto 3, the Yoga of the King.